Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, starting with some college football. You know, it's been a minute or so since we've had an update on Urban Meyer, Zach Smith, and Ohio State football. So why don't we start right there? Why don't we start with a report from the Toledo Blade that Zach Smith was arrested and charged with drunken driving in 2013? I mean, fantastic, right? Even better than Zach Smith, wide receivers coach for the Ohio State, being arrested for DUI was the fact that he says he did not inform Urban Meyer of the fact that he was arrested and charged with drunken driving. But we know it happened. We know it happened on February 23rd, 2013. How do I know that? Because the Toledo Blade posted the arrest report. And the report includes the regular deets like place of employment, Ohio State University, why he was pulled over, an inventory of the items in that car, like two cell phone chargers, an ignition key, miscellaneous clothing, miscellaneous sealed bottled beer, miscellaneous footwear, and one container of Libido Max supplements. So, Zach Smith, wide receivers coach at the Ohio State University, was pulled over at 2:43 a.m. for doing 67 in a 50. And according to police, his eyes were, quote, red and glassy. There was a strong odor of alcoholic beverage coming from inside the vehicle, end quote. But he never told Urban Meyer about it. And the charges were ultimately reduced. And even better than that, according to Brett McMurphy, the, quote, judge that reduced Zach Smith's 2013 drunken driving charges is a 1968 Ohio State graduate and a member of the Ohio State University's President's Club. Nice job, everybody. Really nice job. Really well done. Not dirty at all. Even better, when Nebraska wide receivers coach Keith Williams was arrested for DUI back in 2016, Smith, who according to the Omaha World Herald had, quote, occasionally engaged in a Twitter rivalry with Williams, appeared to take a shot at Williams on Twitter. In other words, a guy who had been arrested for DUI 3 years earlier was taking a run at a rival coach who was arrested for DUI. Now that's rich and classy. Classy as hell. And yes, Buckeye honks. Yes, Buckeye honks. I know what you're thinking before you think it. If Zach Smith did not tell Urban Meyer about that DUI, how could Urban Meyer have done anything about that DUI? Fair point. Fair point. Here's another fair point, though. Is it not the head coach's job to know everything? Didn't know about it or didn't want to know about it? I mean, come on. We're talking about Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer, always the smartest guy in the room. Urban Meyer, smartest guy on the planet, not named Jim Harbaugh. Meyer walks around like a rocket scientist, except when it comes to Zach Smith. Then Herb is really dumb or really ignorant or both. You see, because a picture of Smith has emerged, and it's of a guy who's had one run-in with the law after another, and apparently it just doesn't matter. Not to Herb anyway. Check out this guy's rap sheet. 2009, arrested for aggravated battery after allegedly shoving his pregnant wife against a wall. 2013, arrested for drunk driving. October 2015, report filed against Smith for domestic violence and felonious assault. November 2015, report filed against Smith for menacing by stalking. May 2018, Smith charged with criminal trespass. July 2018, Smith's ex-wife files for an order of protection. So, Herb allegedly did not know about the DUI because Smith never told him. He claims he didn't know about the 2015 incident, even though Smith's ex-wife shared what appeared to be a text message or messages between her and Urban Meyer's wife about the incident. I mean, where does this thing stop? So we're to believe also that Urban Meyer's wife, Shelly, knew about that, but Herb didn't. Shelly knew, but didn't bother telling Herb. Didn't tell Herb that a couple that they were allegedly counseling had another meltdown. She's kept that little detail from her husband. Oh, okay, sure, that's cool. Nothing weird about that. This leads me to believe that Zach Smith must be some hell of a coach. He must really be the greatest wide receivers coach ever, the way people keep letting him skate, the way people keep covering for him. You'd think that he was Earl Bruce himself and not Earl's grandson. Or Bruce, Woody Hayes, the sweater Jim Tressel, and Herb all rolled into one. And the drunk driving arrest brings that back up once again. How much was being covered up here in order to keep this guy around? Because it seems like a hell of a lot. And if this is what we now know, how much don't we know? And for Ohio State, how much are you willing to put up with? How much is the Ohio State University willing to put up with? I mean, I get it. Urban Meyer is a hell of a football coach. But at what point do you say, enough's enough? We won football games before Urban Meyer. We'll win football games after Urban Meyer. But we're going to make a statement about our values right now. Because for a while now, the actions, or in this case, inactions, have made statements about the Ohio State University's values, and those statements have said that keeping an assistant with an alleged history of domestic violence and who gets smashed and then gets behind the wheel of his car is more important than anything else. And one more thought about Herb. What about Herb? Was this not the same guy who said at his introductory presser that one of the reasons he left Florida was, quote, I didn't like the state of college football. A lot of stuff going on. I'd hear about all kinds of things going on, and I just didn't want to be a part of that. End quote. My man, you had more than 30 players arrested at Florida. You've had an assistant coach with one run-in with the law after another and still kept his job. And you don't like the state of college football? Herb, you are the state of college football. Cornhusker head coach Scott Frost is my guest. Scott, great to have you back. How are you?
Good, Rome. How you doing?
Good, good, Scott. Great talking to you. Now, you and I did talk a few days after you were introduced as the head coach back in December. So bring me up to date. What have the last 8 months been like for you? And has it been pretty much what you expected?
Yeah, it has. You know, it's been exciting. It's been a lot of fun. Sometimes as a head coach, you find yourself in different situations. We're finding ourselves in charge of a historic program with a ton of tradition, but with a lot of things that needed to be fixed in order to have things run our way. And so the last 8 months has just been a lot of work, laying the groundwork for a foundation of what we want to build on.
Yeah, Scott, you've been pretty clear about that. I mean, you've been clear in saying that when you first got there and came back, and even before when you were following the program from afar, you were not exactly thrilled with what you saw in terms of the state of that program. Can you take me back? What did you see then, and then how have you gone about changing that?
We just want to get back to what works for Nebraska. And what worked for Nebraska made Nebraska arguably the best program in the country for 20, 25 years. And I think there was an intentional departure from some of those methods. We want to be the best at a lot of things. Nebraska used to be the best at strength and conditioning and nutrition and player development. And we had a bunch of players on the roster, a lot of walk-ons that contributed. We developed players well. We outworked people. We had a bunch of kids that love football that were ready to play at any time. And watching from afar, some of those methods, I think, just weren't in place anymore. And everybody does things a different way, but we have some guys that have known Nebraska's program and know what makes it has made it great in the past, and we're doing everything we can to try to re-implement a lot of those things.
Scott Frost joining us. And in terms of those guys, as an example, you had Jason Peter and Grant Wistrom in to speak to the team. Why was that important to you, and what was their message to today's players?
You know, they had a great message. I think the over and under for cuss words was at 60, and they went flying by that in the first 10 minutes of the speech. But what I really wanted the players to see is the passion that exists. Those guys haven't put on a Nebraska helmet in 25 years, and they're still so passionate about Nebraska, the state of Nebraska, Nebraska football. We want kids that care and love the game, and there's not two better examples of that than Grant and Jason.
You know, Scott, I've told the story, and you and I, I'm sure, have talked about this at length, but one of the first times, once we syndicated this show and I took it outside the state of California, one of the first trips we took was to Omaha, and that's when you guys were rolling. Jason Peter came out, Christian Peter came out, Jared Tomich came out. I had never in my life seen anything like it. I saw Nebraska football up close for the first time. What was it like back then, and could it ever be like again?
we're going to do everything we can to get it back there. The run of success that Coach Osborne had is unprecedented. I don't know how many times it's been duplicated, if any. We're going to do our best to get back there, but we have a lot to build on. Just talking about you being in Omaha and seeing the types of sports fans that are there, the passion for Nebraska football. We got all the resources that we need to try to build it again, and it's not going to happen overnight, but I really like where we're headed.
Used to be that hiring was so hard, multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process, but today hiring can be easy and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As the applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. With results like that, it is no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter.com/clones, C-L-O-N-E-S. ZipRecruiter.com/clones, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We're talking to Scott Frost. You mentioned Tom Osborne, who's obviously a legend. Hey, Scott, what's it like? I mean, you played for him, won a national championship with him, and now the tables, so to speak, have kind of been turned. Now he comes in to talk to you. Now he comes to practice, and he watches. I know he's there if you need him. It's got to be kind of surreal. What's that like for you now as head coach?
Yeah, that part is surreal for me. You know, I used to go into his office and sit there with him as the head coach, and just the thought that I'm sitting in the same seat that he used to sit in, it's an honor and it's humbling, but Coach is a great man on top of being a good coach, and he's always there for me as a resource, and that's been invaluable.
We're talking to Nebraska head football coach Scott Frost, and then at Big Ten Media Days, you made the point that, quote, people better get us now, because when you get rolling, Scott, look out. Now, I know you're not one who's going to run your mouth. You're not going to pop off, but what have you seen so far from the players in the first few months that makes you feel like there's already momentum building?
I can't tell you how far we've come since January. It's exciting for me to see changing the culture and getting guys thinking the right way. The work ethic is changing. The togetherness is changing. Our strength and conditioning coach, Zach Duvall, has done a great job, and our team looks completely different. I'm so excited about the progress we've made, and we get a chance now this year to test ourselves and see how much difference that progress makes when we line up against opponents. But I can feel it heading in the right direction. We got a coaching staff that just went through a rebuild the last couple of years with a winless team, and I know the formula works, so we're just going to stick to the plan and be patient and keep grinding every day.
You know, one more thing about that. Even though you're talking about people trying to get their shots in before you get this thing rolling, it does not mean you're not going to attack in your first season. So in your mind, what's a successful first year? Is it about the record or is it about something else?
No, I think it's about something else. Wins and losses come if you're doing things the right way. We got a saying here, day by day. We're going to take things day by day, and that doesn't mean each game. That means each practice that we go to, each class. Every time they go eat, I want them to do everything right. I want them to attack everything they do and just make sure that we're better today than we were yesterday. And if we stay on that track, I don't know when they're going to come, but a lot of wins will follow.
Got a few more moments with Scott Frost. You know, I also know that you brought a stretch or a warm-up session with you that the players have talked quite a bit about. What's involved in that, and what was it like the first day you introduced it to the players? How did they respond, and what did they do?
Well, they're learning. We've had to teach them all that stuff, but that actually started at Oregon when I was out there with Chip and Jimmy Radcliffe, who's a legend out there, the strength and conditioning coach, and scientifically, it's to get guys ready, it's better to have an active warm-up rather than just sit on the ground and stretch your muscles. You don't get as much out of that. So we developed a warm-up that we call stretch that gets guys ready, and it gets them ready in a hurry. And it's kind of funny, if you've been around this program or one of the other ones that's used it, you learn to hate the word stretch because it's a lot of work. But I think it not only does it get guys ready to play, but it kind of emphasizes, you know, our attack mentality. Right when we hit the field, we want to go fast, and our version of stretch does that for us.
You know, you mentioned Chip Kelly. Before I let you go, you spent some time with him in Oregon. You know, Scott, when he was there and when you were there with him, you guys did some things that were revolutionary. Skip went to the NFL. Skip comes back. How do you think he'll do at UCLA?
Oh, he's a smart guy, a really good guy, knows what he's doing. I have no doubt that he'll be successful. And, you know, he's one of my friends in the business, so I'll be rooting for him, and I'm sure he'll be rooting for us.
Scott, last thought. I know you're focused on your program, but as a head coach, when you hear stories that imply a toxic atmosphere at another school where coaches might be yelling at players, berating players, belittling players, what's your reaction to that?
Just that we don't ever want to do that here. Every head coach has their own way of getting the job done, and there's probably not any one that's more right than the other. You know, but I know at Nebraska, we're never gonna swear at kids and MF kids. We're never gonna try to intimidate and motivate through intimidation. And you know, this is a new day and age, and I think things have changed. And learning from Coach Osborne here, you know, I was able to see firsthand how loving players and encouraging them and teaching them can get as much done as any other way. And that's going to always be the mindset as long as I'm here.
You know, since you said that, one final thought. One of the things that the guys have talked about is that it took them a matter of minutes before they knew that they wanted to go to battle for you, that they wanted to play for you. So what's it mean to you to hear that, and how are you able to develop that kind of connection with your players so quickly?
Well, if the players know you genuinely care about them, usually they're going to run through a wall for you. And this coaching staff that I have, I know how much they care about the players, and it takes a while to earn that trust. You know, everybody talks the talk, but you have to actually show kids that you care about them, and usually that kind of relationship gets developed through shared experiences. And we've had quite a few already, and we're going to have more, but I want the team to be close from the coaching staff to the players and beyond.
Head football coach in Nebraska, 2017 Home Depot Coach of the Year. He won a national title there as a player, and Nebraska gets things kicked off September 1st against Akron. Scott Frost, our guest. Scott, great to have you back. I appreciate your time very much. Great talking to you, Scott.
Hey, man, has anybody ever told you that when they're on your show, they find themselves talking faster because you talk fast?
I like that, man. Let's talk a little baseball. I want to talk about Sunday night. Let's go back a couple of nights, and specifically, let's talk about the Nats and the Cubs and what went down at Wrigley. I did not get to this yesterday because coming off a two-week bender, I had a lot to get to. I did not get to it. This happened on Sunday night. The Nats were up 3-0 going into the ninth inning. Ryan Madsen was on the mound looking to close it out. He gets the first out in that game. Then he gives up an infield single. He then followed that with a hit-by-pitch. He got Kyle Schwarber to foul out for the second out, but then he hit another batter, which loaded up the bases. So now you have the bases loaded for Cubs rookie pinch hitter, David Bote. Cubs rookie pinch hitter, David Bote. 2-2 count, and then this happened.
2-2 on David Bote, trying to come through. And the pitch on the way. Bote drives one in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Taylor. It's got a chance. It's a grand slam. A grand slam for David Bote. And the Cubs have won the ball game. Can you believe it?
Wow. As soon as he hit it, he knew it was gone. He started pointing in the air. Cubs win in a grand slam.
Thanks to Cubs Radio for that. So a pinch hit, walk off, grand slam. An ultimate grand slam. And he did it at Wrigley with Bill Murray in attendance. I mean, chills. Goosebumps for days. It does not get any better than that. Oh, wait, it does. Because according to Bote, that was his first ever walk-off homer on any level of baseball. And you could not pick a better time or place than Sunday night at Wrigley with Peter Venkman watching. When the ball left his bat, the crowd sounded like a jet taking off from O'Hare. I mean, it made that kind of sound. It was that kind of roar from the crowd. It was a hell of a moment, an amazing moment. And Bote didn't slow trot that bomb either. This guy was running around the bases like it was going to be an inside the park job. But because we simply cannot have nice things, we had to chase that incredible moment on Sunday night with another moment Monday. This moment, Monday, because yesterday, the same guy who hit that walk-off slam apologized for a bat flip. Quote, I didn't even realize I did it until I saw it on the replay. I meant no disrespect by any means. It was the heat of the moment." End quote. You see, this to me is why baseball has got such a big problem. Because David Bodie feels like he needs to apologize for a bat flip on a pinch hit, walk-off, grand slam. Because maybe some of the Nationals felt disrespected by that moment, and because there's a chance that the next time he faces the Nats, some red ass is going to throw a rock 95 in his ribs. And if you've seen the video or you saw it in the moment, it's not like he went Joey Bats with that flip. It was barely a flip at all. But as much as the NFL gets the rap of the No Fun League, baseball is even worse. You have an amazing moment on a Sunday night like that, yet you feel the need to cover on Monday by apologizing. You know, for who? For what? But then again, I get it. I understand why Bodie did apologize. He's a rookie. Some pitchers are sore losers. Some pitchers are red asses. Some pitchers, instead of owning the fact that they screwed up and got beat by a bad pitch, are going to stick one in your ear for celebrating. And this is why baseball's got a problem. Because you can't celebrate. You can't show any emotion or celebrate an amazing moment because it might show up the pitcher and he'll end up getting butthurt. And butthurt pitchers end up hurting batters with 95-mile-an-hour heat. I mean, what I'm saying is I cannot tell you how much I hate the fact that David Bodie's got to apologize. But at the same time, I understand why he did. If I thought that I might wear a fastball, I'd probably issue a preemptive apology as well, because a lot of pitchers are big babies. But on behalf of America, let me just say this. Apology not accepted, David. Because the only thing David Bodie should be apologizing for is the fact that that bat ever landed in the first place. He should have flipped that bat over the center field fence. He should have turned on that fastball and then looked up into the sky and fired that bat as hard as he could. Hit the lights with the bats. And then do handstands and cartwheels all around the bases before somersaulting into home plate. And if the Nats have a problem with that, then the Nats have a problem with themselves. And the lamest thing ever is to say, if you don't want him celebrating a home run, do not give up a home run. Normally lame, but in this case, it's true. If anybody should be wearing that moment, it's the guy who threw the pitch, not the dude who hit the pitch. I hate that that guy had to double back and apologize. And for a bat flip, there was barely a bat flip at all. But then again, if it were me and I was staring at a 95-mile-an-hour rock in my ribs or in my ear, I'd probably come with a preemptive apology as well. I just hate that the guy did it. And that's one of the problems with baseball. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Awesome. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
All right. This email says, Rome, what was Bodie supposed to do after that walk-off? Choke on his spit and say, well, Bob,
Because your ass in a war. Well,
No, you know what he was supposed to do? He was supposed to do exactly what he did do. Barely toss the bat. Except, like I said, I would have thrown the bat over the fence. And then run around the bases. You know what you're supposed to do when you hit a home run like that? Whatever the hell you want. What you're supposed to do is whatever you want. But only in baseball is there this weird arcane code that nobody understands unless they played the game at the very highest level about what you can and cannot do. But whatever you do, do not show up the guy that put it on a tee in the first place so you could turn it around in that moment and walk off. Whatever you do, don't show that guy up because that's disrespecting the game. Yet the same game that wants to take a run at Mike Trout for not having more personality. Why would he? Why would anybody have any personality if all it's going to get you is dotted? But it's Mike Trout's fault. Peter Gibbons, a.k.a. at Mike D for three, tweets, "There is never a need to apologize for a grand slam bat flip, Rome. It is the heat of the moment. Sincerely, Asia." You know what? I'm going to allow that. I'm going to allow that, Alvin. We are joined by card safety AJ Howard. AJ, nice to meet you. Good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be here on the show.
Good. Good to have you on the show. So you're in your first NFL training camp right now. I mean, that's an opportunity, obviously, that every single kid who plays football dreams of. What has the experience been like? Is it all a grind, or are you able to kind of enjoy a little bit as well?
I would say it's all a grind. I'm just being around a lot of the veteran guys, kind of just teaching me the way and teaching me how things are supposed to go around here in the Cardinal way. It's a grind every day, and we're getting through it one more day.
AJ Howard joining us. You know, so you're a defensive back at App State. Your head coach, Steve Wilks, was also a defensive back at App State. He said he likes the fact that you're an App State man, but do you feel like it's given you any kind of advantage or any kind of edge in camp?
No, I don't think so at all. I understand that at the end of the day, it's kind of all a business, you know, and production guys will play. Guys who produce well will play, and I don't think App State has anything to do with that.
I figured you might have something to say about that, or that might be what you said. Now, listen, I had Steve Wilks on the show right after he was hired. Man, I could not be more impressed, honestly, even as a guy, a talk show host. I couldn't be more fired up just talking to him. What's it been like playing for him so far, and how would you describe his energy?
I love playing for him. He's a fiery guy. He brings energy to the whole defense and DB specifically because he has a background in coaching DB. So he likes being around us. He likes talking to us, joking with us, and just keeping us energized for practices. I love it.
My guest is AJ Howard. He's the safety for the Arizona Cardinals. So go back a little bit to when you were a two-time Ironman Award winner in Harris County back in high school. What were you like as a high school player?
I really didn't come around, I think, until like my junior year when I really started doing well on the field. It took me a couple of years to learn the plays and kind of get acclimated to even high school football. But my junior and senior year, I believe I did really well, got a few offers, and was able to attend App State. So it all worked out for me.
Okay, what about that? I mean, you were putting up some numbers, and you were getting better and better, and you were playing for a high school coach in Tommy Parks. I mean, exactly what kind of interest were you getting from college programs?
With Coach Parks playing under him, I got a lot of interest. My junior year, like I said, after that, I started to get offers from Western Kentucky, App State, a lot of the Sun Belt teams and Conference USA teams I was getting offers from, and I ended up picking App State as my school of choice.
Right, so not only do you go to App State, but you immediately start all 12 games as a true freshman. What was it like to make that transition from high school ball to college ball, and at that point, how'd you make it look so easy?
It was pretty cool. I wouldn't say it was easy at all, but I came in early. I enrolled early January of my freshman year, so I kind of got 7 or 8 months on all the other freshmen coming in. So that helped out a lot as far as learning the plays and just learning how things are done at App State.
AJ Howard, my guest. All right, so you figured out how things were done there. You actually had a great career at App State. So then you go into your pro day. How much attention were you getting from NFL teams, and what was your mindset during your pro day?
I did really well. I trained out here at Fisher Institute in Arizona and then ended up going back to App State and performing really well. So I had a lot of teams talking to me between then and the draft, maybe like I want to say 19 or 20 teams that I've made contact with between that time because of a good pro day.
All right, so you had a good pro day and you had a lot of conversations, but then coming out of that pro day, there was talk about how you'd put yourself in position to be drafted. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, 19 or 20 teams had some interest, but then the draft comes and your name isn't called. What was your experience like, and then what was your mindset?
Well, you try not to get down on yourself, and the mindset that you bring is that you just want to compete and work hard and show that you're just as good as the guys that got drafted. And that's what I was explaining to a lot of the coaches pre-draft when I started to get the feeling, okay, I may be an undrafted guy. So it helped a lot with my mindset, just keeping me pushing on and trying to show what I can do.
AJ Howard, my guest. The thing about that is, I mean, it's disappointing, of course, but if you're not drafted, then all of a sudden you get an opportunity where maybe you can pick where you want to go. What did you like about Arizona?
The situation here at the time, there wasn't many safeties on the roster, so I feel like I had a good opportunity and a fair opportunity to make the squad. So I don't regret it at all. This is a great choice for me, I think.
All right, so when you're a safety and you're showing up to camp with the Arizona Cardinals, that means you're on the other side of the line. You're going to see Larry Fitzgerald. What's that been like so far?
It's amazing. I mean, you try not to get very starstruck, and you see him all around, whether it's in the locker room or on the field. He's a great guy to be around and a good guy to learn from. So if anything, I'm just learning from him more than anything.
You know, I wonder, I mean, you and I are talking right now, and it sounds like you've already been in the league. You don't sound like you're awed by the situation at all. As you go to work, do you feel like this is exactly where I belong? I'm one of the guys? Or is the whole thing just a little bit surreal still on some level?
I kind of feel like this is where I belong, and it is also surreal because this is where everybody wants to be eventually. When you're a football player in the little league and just growing up, this is where you want to make it to. But after playing the first preseason game, I really feel like this is where I belong and that I can stick around for a long time.
All right, so you made a play especially. In fact, a few plays in that first preseason game. In the third quarter, a pass is tipped. You come flying in. You get that pick. Can you take me through the play? What did you see and what did it feel like to make that pick?
Well, I was a post safety at the time, and I just broke on a slant route that was coming from the weak side, and I was blessed enough to have my corner break it up and ball tip right to me. So, I mean, it was kind of an opportunity of a lifetime that you can't miss out on.
AJ Howard joining us. Also in that game, you hit Chargers tight end Sean Colkin with what appeared to be a textbook tackle, and you forced a fumble. So it looked like you made another play, but then a flag was thrown. What was your reaction when you saw the flag?
I feel like I had made a great break and a great tackle, but I understand that it's the preseason, and now it's the time for referees to kind of enforce those rules during these games. So I could understand it.
Hey, listen, you got a lot on your mind anyway, but at this point, do you know what kind of tackles and hits are going to be flagged and which ones will not be flagged, or is that still kind of a gray area?
Yeah, we have a good idea. Our defense coordinator, Coach Holcomb, and also our head coach, Coach Wilkes, is teaching us and showing us film on things that are the proper ways, techniques and things like that to tackle. So we've had enough coaching and stuff on that, so we kind of know the way of what to do.
Hey, listen, you're a pro athlete. You're going to adjust, and you can change your technique, but is it not weird? I mean, have you not tackled a certain way your entire life, and are you not relearning that on the pro level? Is it that extreme?
I wouldn't say it's that extreme, but the game's just evolving every year, and we just have to change the way we do things and acclimate ourselves to what's going on now in the game of football.
AJ Howard, my guest. All right, so a final thought. What about the rest of training camp? What's your mindset as you approach the rest of camp?
Just to get it better, best I can each day, and taking it one day at a time, not looking ahead, not looking behind, just one day at a time.
Let's go to Lincoln. Casey in Lincoln. It's good to have you, Casey. How are you?
What's up, man? How's it going today?
Good, good. So what do you think? You heard your coach. Is Scott Frost the guy to bring it back?
Man, I love it. I'm not jumping on the natty for this year, but next year, all these other colleges better watch out. It's on, because Scott Frost has that Osborne in him, you know, to teach this team the right character, the right values, get these black shirts back on track. I'm just telling you, I was there at that 97 national championship with Frost and Osborne in their last game. As soon as they hired Frost back, I started feeling those feelings again.
Hey, Casey, what's it like? What's it like? What's the buzz like in and around Lincoln now that he's back?
Man, it's unreal. It's unreal for me because I consider myself a diehard. Like, I stayed true with Mike Riley and some of these other off brands that have been here. I mean, I stayed true and I stood by him while people were driving Mike Riley into the ground. And you know, I stayed by my program. I look at it like, you know, the University of Nebraska has provided me good times throughout my whole life. I mean, I can remember being a little kid, 7 years old, crying when we lost that national championship going for two. And since that day, I don't remember anything else before then about Nebraska football. But since that day, I've been diehard since. And now that Scott Frost is back, it's just, I mean, there's no way that he won't bring us back to that prominence. There's no fear of failure in our program.
Hey, Casey. War me and my fiance. War Scott Frost.
War Jordan.
War Scott Frost. War national championship.
Sorry about that, Casey.
I had to. My bad. He is a Drew League legend. He is a three-time Drew League MVP. He is the first three-time MVP in the history of the Drew. 29 points, 7 boards, 6 assists per game for Birdie's Revenge this season. I'm joined in studio by Frank Nitti. Frank, my man, it's really nice to see you. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm doing good. Great to see you. Great to, you know, meet you. It's a great atmosphere to be in.
My man, it's great to meet you, and it's a great atmosphere. Listen, there's so much I want to talk to you about. I think your story is amazing. But before we really get into this, for people watching right now and for people listening, for them to really understand, they've got to know what the Drew League is. For those who have never been to a game, how would you describe the atmosphere at the Drew during a game?
The atmosphere is amazing. It's an NBA style of play. You get the NBA talent. You get the NBA atmosphere. It's everything NBA is and isn't at the same time for free. So,
I mean, it's a great point. And that's the buzz is amazing. It's one thing to have that stage, right? But the scene's amazing in the sense that you see the celebrities who come in to watch these games, and that's before we even get into who's actually playing in the game. But you've got NBA guys who routinely show up. You have members of Congress who show up. You've got guys like Kobe Bryant, DeMar DeRozan, Rudy Gay, Isaiah Thomas, all there. I mean, you're obviously focused on the game, but are you aware of who's in the crowd, and can you tap into it? Does it pump you up?
Oh, it pumps me up like no other. It's funny you mentioned Isaiah Thomas. He actually, we were DMing each other on Instagram trying to figure out what day I was playing. And I told him, like, yo, it's other good games if you want to go, but I play this day. He was like, nah, just tell me when you play. Wow. I was like, all right, that's awesome. And what's crazy is...
I got to stop right there. What's that feel like when a guy like IT says, no, man, I want to watch you play. I'm coming to see you play. How's that feel?
He didn't say those words, but it's kind of what he insinuated, but... That's amazing, man, to have guys. I mean, that just, you know, that proves that everybody wants to really see what it's about. Like, let's see if they is who they say he is. So, and he came there at a game I played against Denzel Valentine. So that was a good game.
No, that was a real good game. Frank Nitti, my guest. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a legendary moment, actually. A few weeks back, Chicago Bull Denzel Valentine shows up. He scores early in a game, and he starts to celebrate a little bit, and then he tells you he plays in the NBA. What was your reaction to that?
It was actually, I'll make millions. I'm going to show you why I'm in the NBA.
Oh, okay.
So it was a little more ballsy, but excuse my French.
It's all right.
It kind of, I love it as I'm dribbling back down the court to Jimmy Rupps because they know who I am. He doesn't, but everyone knows, like, oh my God, like, he's talking to Frank. And everyone knows once you get me talking, you know, I'm a play as hard as possible. If I lose, I lose, but I'm going to go down fighting. I guarantee you that.
Hey, Frank, did he have no idea who he was talking to?
I talked to his coach literally at the Drew League Championship Sunday was yesterday, right? I talked to his coach.
Yesterday was Monday. Sunday was before
two
Monday.
2 days ago. Sorry, I'm so all over the place. I talked to his at the Drew League Championship Sunday, Chris Young, which is another mentor, a great guy that runs Air West. I talked to him, which was their coach. He at the beginning of the game, he said, Denzel was like, I'm going to set the tone. They were kind of warning him about me. At the end of the game,
he said, man.
At the end of the game, Denzel told the coach, Chris Young, like, I just didn't know who he was. So it kind of, I'm glad he knows now.
Frank Nitti, he knows now, because what happened was you went off for 44 and 11. You locked him up on defense. You pretty much wiped the floor with Valentine. How important was it for you to tell him, yeah, you might play in the NBA, you might make millions, but the Drew League is my league?
That's exactly what I said, how I felt, and what I meant. I wouldn't say mine, I would say ours. It took me a while to kind of make my stamp in it, but I wanted to let people know that when you come, you're playing against us, me and our teammates, we're a great team. So don't take us, you know, just because we're not in NBA doesn't mean we're going to come out here and, you know, play lackadaisical. So
and don't disrespect us. Frank Nitti joining me in studio. You know what's amazing? You go back further. Coming up, you were a skateboarder, right? Yeah. How much did you like basketball as a kid?
To be honest, it was kind of contradicting because most of my friends were like, they play basketball. So I couldn't really relate as much because I like skateboarding a little more. So it was tough. I found a balance to just play with them, you know, just to be around my friends when I could. But for the most part, like, I would go to skate parks by myself, sometimes with one of my friends, Anthony Corona, which is one of my good friends from way younger. But I used to go with, like, me and him. I used to be solo a lot of times or with him, so I didn't really...
I mean, obviously you had skills for it. You had a knack for basketball. How'd you get into skateboarding? Especially if you were kind of riding solo. How'd you get into that?
I've always liked being able to balance on a board. I mean, I just recently learned how to snowboard as well, being up in Canada. So I kind of just like, I don't know, it gives me like a thrill to be on top of a board.
Frank Nitti joining me in studio. How about snowboarding? It's not as easy as it looks, actually.
It is not, man. It is very hard. I felt a lot. I'm more of a visual learner. I learned there than right. Anybody could tell me. I didn't start on the baby slopes. I just started out on the big ones. And I was like, I'll figure it out.
So I'm skipping ahead now. You mentioned your time in Canada. What was that like balling up in Canada?
kind of was amazing. It was tough. They showed me a lot of love, man, a lot of love I didn't think, you know, I deserved.
Why do you think that was?
A lot of people see something in me I don't, to be honest with you. I don't see what everyone else sees. I kind of started to, once, you know, certain people started to tell you, like, man, you can play. It's like, all right, I'll believe you a little bit. But it hasn't hit me yet. If I could really play, you know, I'd be somewhere, like huge. So I'm just riding it till the wheels fall off, and I'll play my heart out.
So is it me? I mean, did you find the game, or did the game find you? Now, I don't mean, okay, not your friend, the game.
I was just going to say.
I mean basketball, the game, right?
Kind of
right.
Both.
Yeah, right. You get into that. Go ahead. Lay that out for me.
Which one? Did the game find me or the actual game?
Okay, I'll start with the game of basketball. Did it find you or did you find it?
It found me, 100%. To be honest, I played defense 11th and 12th grade of high school. I had my coach, one of my favorite coaches ever, Andy Ground from Saddleback College, come up to me. To this day, we still laugh about it. He said I big-timed him. But I didn't know that anyone...
When he was recruiting you, right?
Correct. I didn't know that anyone would be interested in me. Like, after basketball, I didn't know what I was going to... I mean, after high school, I didn't know what I was going to do. It wasn't, I'm going to go play basketball. So literally, when he recruited me, I kind of just talked to him. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, I'll go play if you want me to. But it was kind of like, does this guy really want me? Like, what does he see that I don't see in myself? So...
It's kind of weird that, like, you were the last guy to know. Like, everybody looks at you and they see something. So you end up going to college and you play with Damian Lillard. What was that like?
Amazing, man. One of the best guards I've ever seen in person. His work ethic, man, was inspiring.
Right.
A lot of people didn't understand. I called it being there for him. I made a joke one time to the coaches my year there, which was his sophomore year. And we were in the Eastern Washington gym and Rodney Stuckey was on the wall.
Sure.
And I said, who played for the Pistons? I said, is Dame going to get a banner like that? And he laughed, and they just said, don't pump his head up like that. And I'm like, man, I can tell. Like, I know what NBA talent is. I know what it looks like. So I'm like, he's going to be in the NBA. Like, granted, I don't know how well he'll do, but with his work ethic, I'm sure he'll do amazing. One of the top guards in the league.
How'd you know that, though? I mean, back then, easy to say now when you look at Dame, but where he was at that time, like you just said, I know what NBA talent looks like. What'd it look like? How'd you know?
I was a defensive player in 11th, 12th grade of high school, junior college. I kind of picked apart, like, what guys were good at and what guys, like, if you can't stop a guy from getting a shot off or if he can get to his spots at will, I can, on me at least. I mean, I feel like I'm a really good defender. So I feel like if he got every shot he wanted every time. I just had to make it tough for him.
Right, but if a guy like that gets to a spot anytime he wants, any way he wants, that's how that looks. Frank Nitti is my guest in studio. Thing is, you go to college and you come back to L.A. and then, you know, you were at Cal State L.A., you get a shot with the L.A. Defenders and you break your hand, you get married, you get a job, you become a father. At that point, were you thinking about basketball?
No, sir, not one bit.
Not one bit. What did you do?
I had to provide, man. I didn't want to be one of those basketball players that went and played and didn't come back to anything. I didn't know how far it would take me, so I always wanted to lay some ground, get married, buy a condo, which we did, have our daughter, which we agreed on, you know. So it's kind of, it was tough because it was like, man, I'm really giving up the dream. But at the same time, like, my dream was more to have a family, be stable, and just take care of them and, like, live a good life. I don't really think of it as, yo, I want to go play in the NBA. I want to go. Like, all that's great. I would love it. But I understand the politics of the NBA. I understand how hard it is to get there. I understand the dedication of it. So, I dedicated myself to my family. Like, that was more important than anything else.
Frank Nitti, my guest. So, how did you provide for your family? What did you do?
I was a manager. I started off a sales rep at Sprint. One of my groomsmen, one of my best friends, Sam Mubassari, actually gave me a shot at he was a district manager for Sprint and gave me a sales rep job. And literally, like, I had so much fun just communicating, talking to people and, you know, hearing about everybody's day and day different lives. Like, I enjoyed it. So
in a store?
In a retail store. I was
okay.
In a retail store. So mm-hmm. I kind of moved up and ended up switching companies, going to Verizon, which I started managing a store. So it was great. Like, I started moving up in the company. Like, I was starting a career. So I didn't mind it at all.
Dude, I was going to say, I'm sitting with you. You have a lot of it. You got a lot of charisma. I'm guessing you were pretty good at it. Were you making a pretty good living doing that?
I was great. We bought our condo. I had a nice car, you know, that got totaled, but I had a nice car. My family was good, man. They have daycare. We used to go on trips. You know, do a little bit of everything. Like, I was I was complacent. I was fine. I didn't
need
you
were doing
else.
What you're supposed to do. Provide for your family, being a good husband, being a good father, making money, and going back to the other game. Your friend, the game, sees you playing, and he talks to you about building a Drew League team around you. What was that about? How'd that come to be?
I used to watch them play a lot. They always had all the NBA players on their team, but he didn't win. So with all NBA players, because at the end of the day, they're going back to the NBA.
Right.
Like the Drew isn't for them. They love it, but it isn't like what their, you know, their goal is. For me, like I was a, you know, 9-to-5 worker, and it was more like, let me go be a superstar on the weekend. If he wants me to play with them, I'll play with them. And it turned out well because we literally didn't have any NBA players, but we were winning, you know, almost every game.
All right, so now the team is built around you, and you win the Drew League MVP in 2016. Then you win it again in 2017. How much did that mean to you?
It meant a lot because at the end of the day, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the team itself. It meant a lot because I was a 9-to-5 worker, and guys would come at me every night or every game, just like trying to like destroy me. And it just wasn't happening, and I was still having good games. So it's like, and at that time, everybody's like, "Why aren't you playing?" It's like, I'm stable. Like at the end of the day, like I want to have stability. So that's all I cared about. And I feel like in basketball, once you get hurt or something like that, like your stability is shot right off the bat. So if you're not in, you know, the NBA with the great, you know, trainers and everything like that, it's kind of hard to take care of your body. So winning that kind of just, it meant everything to me with, you know, me being a 9-to-5 guy.
Listen, I'll be very clear about this. I mean, you're a 9-to-5 guy, but you're a folk hero. People are showing up to see you. And I don't mean just hoop junkies and regular folk. I mean guys like Meta World Peace, Jamal Crawford, James Harden. They're showing up. They're hyping you. They want to see you. You had that time in Canada. So where does it leave you now? Are you still that 9-to-5 guy, or is that phone ringing, and are there other opportunities now?
So there's a lot of opportunities now, as weird as that may sound. I just quit working at Soul Stage, which is a shoe store in LA off Fairfax, which my good friend Sam Obassery gave me a job at because that Canada year was rough on you know, my stability. So literally, it's funny. I got off the phone, or I was sitting in the Drew League, and the GM for the Memphis Grizzlies called me, and I had no idea who it was. I don't know basketball like that. So I ended up taking his name down wrong. I got his last name right, and then my agent called me back like, "Hey, you sure it wasn't Chris Wallace instead of Robert Wallace?" And I was like, "I have Robert." And he checked on it, and it was actually Chris Wallace, the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies, which is amazing because at the end of the day, you know.
Did you address him as Robert?
No, I didn't.
You just took it down the wrong way.
Hey, this is Frank, and I just started talking to him. Yeah, I took it down the wrong way.
Like, what are you like? What's up, bro? What's up, Chief? What's up, dude?
Right.
How you doing, home slice?
Just a casual conversation. No, I was shocked when he said of the Memphis Grizzlies. I was like, oh wow, like this is really happening. But along with that, and a ton of overseas offers, man. I don't know what this is gonna, you know, what this is gonna be right now. I'm kind of just playing it safe. We'll see. You know what? I'll take whatever's best for me and my family. That's the important part, because at the end of the day, I'm always be that family man, and what makes sense to them makes sense to me.
Frank Nitti, my guest. You know, Frank, you've been real clear about this, that you feel like you couldn't have done this without your teammates, but you won that third Drew League MVP, and Kobe was there to celebrate that with you. Man, what was that moment like?
Man, that's crazy, because that's one of the, you know, the greatest players ever to play the game. So to walk up, you know, receive your third MVP, shake his hand, him tell you, you know, that's a great achievement. It means a lot, man. That's something a lot of kids don't even get to do. Like sometimes kids just want pictures with Kobe's. You know, I'm standing there with the Drew League 3-time MVP trophy in my hand at the same time giving Kobe a handshake. So, yeah, you can't put something like that into words, man. It was a great feeling, though.
Yeah. Listen, last time, glad you mentioned the kids. You feel like you're an inspiration to young people. When you look at your story, when you look at your journey, the way you stay on your grind and the way it's playing out right now, do you feel like you can be an inspiration? And what is your message to kids?
My message is to never give up, man. I can't tell you how many times I've had professional scouts, coaches, been waived, been told, you know, maybe this isn't for you. I've had that more than a handful of times, to be honest with you. And to be honest, like I just didn't listen to it. Like I kind of, at the end of the day, like I said, I'm always take care of my family. So whether or not, you know, they think this is right for them, I didn't mind. One thing that always stuck with me that which I was recently waived from is the South Bay Lakers. Their head coach, Kobe Carl, he actually said David Nwaba, he waived him too. And David Nwaba is now an NBA player for, you know, multiple. He played on multiple NBA teams. I think he just signed again, but he waived him too. So just because, you know, you get shut down, don't mean give up. Don't give up. Stay at it. You know, if you got that dream, just keep grinding and it'll pay off. But the kids, man, it's crazy. The kids, they kind of do look up to me. I didn't see it at first, but now that, you know, I come to the games and everybody, you know, wants to take a picture with me, like, I don't feel like I've done anything. Like, I'm not in the NBA, like, but these guys, they want to take a picture with me. You know, they see me, you know, going at NBA players, guarding the best NBA players. I guess it is like a folk hero tale.
No, you are. You are definitely that. lots of charisma, a lot of game on and off the floor. Frank, great story. Listen, really good to meet you. I'm anxious to see where you end up next. You made it very clear, no matter what, you're here to take care of your family, but it should be great to see. Really nice to have you in studio, man. Thanks so much.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Frank.
Good night now.